Sherathon 2026. We have a thoughtful conversation about writing as a human in the age of AI with Dr. Bernard Bull lined up for today. You are listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Sarah Golseth.
I'm Andy Bates. Today's episode of The Coffee Hour is underwritten in part by Concordia University, Nebraska. You can learn more about Concordia University, Nebraska at cune.edu.
We are grateful for the support of Concordia University, Nebraska, and we are grateful for the support of listeners like you. Your support is necessary for KFUO to produce quality programs like The Coffee Hour that bring you insightful stories to support you faithfully stewarding your vocations.
Today, you can support KFUO during Share-a-thon. You can do that by texting KFUO to the number 41444 or visit kfuo.org.
Today, Dr. Bernard Bull is joining us, president of Concordia University, Nebraska. Welcome to Share-a-thon on The Coffee Hour, Dr. Bull.
Thanks. I'm excited to be here.
So we love to just pull up some random conversation topics for you because you never fail to have something interesting to say about almost anything. And a while ago, I saw a Facebook post where you were waxing poetic about how AI has influenced how you are a creative. And I thought that was just such a fascinating thing to talk about, especially Andy and I being creatives, our team being a creative team, a lot of our listeners being very creative people. And this influence of AI is everywhere around us right now. And I first want to know about content creation. How does content creation energize you?
Well, I don't know. I think it goes back to my youth. I've always been interested in writing. I wasn't necessarily a great writer, but I loved writing. And I think it stemmed from my love for literature. I loved reading. I didn't read very much as a child, but then when I got to my last year of high school, and then I got into my first year of college, I had an injury and I had to kind of sit around for much of the summer. And so I wasn't able to work. And I was actually house sitting for one of my teachers, who's actually now a faculty member here at Concordia. We worked together at Concordia, but he was a teacher at Metro East Lupin High School at the time that I was a student there years ago. And anyway, his house was full of books. So I was house sitting for him, and I decided I was just going to start reading more aggressively. So that summer, I decided to read a book a day. And I just started in the morning, and I picked up an interesting book, and I would read until I was done with the book. And I'd fall asleep, and I'd wake up the next day, and I did it again. And I did it for about, 35 or 40 days. So I went through 35 to 40 books, which was probably, I think I read more books in that one time period than I'd probably read in the 15 years, prior. The more I read, I love reading. I love reading a wide array of literature. I especially love nonfiction, but I do get into fiction as well. And after reading pretty significantly for many years, trying to work my way through at least a couple of books a week for a couple of decades, I found myself really inclined to want to write more. Already in the 90s, when the internet was finding its way into homes more, I started my first blog. It was a blog called Worth Words, and I would write poetry, I would write random things that I was thinking about, and this was, early to mid-90s. And then I eventually started another blog that was called eTale, and like electronic tale, eTale, and it was email, and I did eTale. So I started writing on it, and I would write pretty regularly. It was almost like my public journal or diary of sorts about my own learning journey, things that I was exploring largely in educational topics, but different issues of life in an increasingly digital world. And lo and behold, it started getting some attention. And I shut it down about 8 or 9 years ago when I first started stepping into administrative roles, just because there are just some ways to manage your identity that are important in certain roles. And yet, at the time I shut it down, it was one of the top 100 most visited education blogs on the internet. And it had led me all over the world. I had been invited to consult for a wide array of groups, Harvard Business Publishing. I got to work with them on a special project. I did a little project for a think tank out in Manhattan called Markle. There was an economic task force run by Madeleine Albright. I got to do a lot of fun and interesting things in that time. And here, I'm a Lutheran school teacher by day. And then in the evenings and weekends, I'm, fly to DC or Manhattan or check something else out. And it was just a really fascinating kind of journey for me. And so I really became interested in writing, short form writing and writing essays, and worked my way through a few graduate degrees at that time as well. And I loved the academic writing and academic research. And so that's when I finally felt like maybe I think I'm ready to take on my first book project. And the first book project was a little book called Missional Moonshot about educational innovation. And then my second one was an edited work through CPH. It was called The Pedagogy of Faith, that's used in some of our Concordia universities for the Teaching the Faith class that's part of the teacher formation. And so I just really fell in love with that process. I'm an ethnographic researcher. I love interviewing, doing observation, studying primary works, and then pulling it all together with some thematic writing that I hope and pray can be a blessing to people. So I have a long history of experimenting. In more recent years, though, especially in the last decade, I've realized that writing is being increasingly influenced by emerging technologies, and people's way that they consume information is shifting and changing. I still love books. There's nothing better than an old, musty book from 150 years ago, that I can use. Sense it and smell it as you read it. But I also accept the fact that I do read through Kindle and electronic books, and I consume articles online and other research publications. But I've become a little bit more comfortable experimenting also with video content. And I did run a podcast for a number of years as well. And a lot of it for me was just experimenting with new venues, new mediums for exploring ideas that matter, especially at the intersection of faith and contemporary life. The way I describe it is a lot of my interest is exploring the significance and relevance of Jesus Christ in view of modern life, thought, trends, and events. And so oftentimes I try to end up there at the end of the day. So that's my content creation journey.
You mentioned emerging technologies. What have you learned about how AI creates content? And I'll use the term create loosely.
Right. Well, I'm continuing to explore it. There are about five or six different AI tools that I'm currently experimenting with and trying out. About right before I became president of Concordia in Nebraska, I'd been invited behind the scenes for a couple of the projects that are now public in terms of AI projects. So I got to experiment early on. And it was about 7 years ago, I started interviewing all of the leading AI experts around the country that I could. People who are running AI labs and other things of that sort, reading all the early phase books on AI. So I've spent a number of years exploring it, but I'm definitely not an expert on the technological side, the programming side of AI. There's a lot there, but I'm primarily exploring the social, spiritual, ethical implications of technology and AI as well. And so my first experiment with AI formally was I created a blog a number of years ago, and I used AI to create a series of seven personas, seven fictional authors, and I gave them personalities, and I played the role of editor, and they had to pitch articles to me. And then I would review them and edit them, and then I would release them. And it was a public disclaimer stating that this was all AI generated. And I was doing it simply as an experiment for me to better understand how AI writes or how AI creates content and what it might look like for sort of human AI interaction or what things for me to be cautious of and so forth. And I have a lot of criticisms of where AI is taking us and concerns, but also it's definitely, AI is not one thing. It's a collection of technologies that are continuing to expand, and they're influencing us in ways that we don't realize. So in terms of the question, though, about, how it creates, there are some signature styles, especially that are sometimes distinct to different AI tools that you might use. I know ChatGPT is a popular one that people use. Some people are using things like Gemini or Perplexity or Claude. There are a series of them, and each of them actually have their own writing styles, but they have certain things that they lend themselves toward. Now, they're being trained by a vast body of writing and knowledge, and the stuff that's readily available to the people who are creating these AI tools. So one thing, for example, is that You know, there's a wealth of really rich literature that will hardly ever inform the answers that you get when you're using AI. I mean, you can try to get better at framing your prompts and your questions, but there's some literature that's just not there. So, for example, me, as someone who geeks out about the history of Lutheran education, when Philip Melanchthon wrote the Book of Visitations, traveling throughout, you know, the German schools, and a rather scathing, pretty firm critique of the state of the school system at the time. My guess is that if you ask AI to help you out with that, it will probably rely upon bloggers and secondary sources of people who claim to have read it and they wrote some things about it. There are probably some translations out there right now that it might tap into and the like. But if you'd ask a broader question, the likelihood of it initiating or even thinking of the Book of Visitations as a consideration is probably pretty slim. You know, it's based upon the more kind of predominant, readily available information right now. Again, this is going to change as technology emerges. And I find that really important. And the other is that it's not going to be informed by lived experience in the way that the writing of an excellent human content creator and author is. Certainly, it can synthesize and analyze research to some extent. It can do some of those things. That really deeply human element that brings some extra measure of life and to a piece of writing, that's still largely lacking. Although I will say this, I've presented on AI a few times, and I throw this out there for people to just ponder. AI can write a rather impressive love letter. It could write a love letter that makes you cry. You know, it could be so moving, and it maybe taps into exactly the things that would cause you to cry. You know, it could analyze your personality and what's most likely to trigger emotion for you. I mean, AI can theoretically do that kind of a thing, but it can't mean it. AI can't mean what it's writing. It can't experience remorse. It can't repent for its sins. And it does engage in what we would consider to be a sin in the human world. It doesn't treat lies or deception as serious as they are oftentimes. And all of those are things that I think we want to be really thoughtful about as we consider outsourcing writing to AI. I'm seeing it happen more and more in the church, everything from people leveraging AI for sermon preparation or research to writing devotions and Bible studies to writing letters to interact with one another. And there's always been ghostwriting. Throughout the history of humanity, ghostwriting has happened and people have attached their name to things that were partially or fully drafted by someone else. In academia, that would be considered an academic integrity issue, but in the larger society and world, it's not necessarily anything that's considered always morally wrong in that kind of situation. But I just really caution myself and others to consider what we're giving up and how much of ourselves we're letting go of sometimes if we pass on that gift of really thoughtful writing to a system that can maybe do it faster, but it can't represent you.
We have more to talk about with Dr. Bernard Bull during the Share-a-thon episode of the Coffee Hour. To support KFUO during Share-a-thon, you can text the message KFUO to the number 41444 or visit KFUO.org. We'll be right back after we take a quick break. You're listening to the Coffee Hour. I'm Sarah Golseth.
I'm Andy Bates.
At Concordia University, Nebraska, discover a distinctly Christian community that equips students to live by faith with courage, character, and conviction. Intentionally combining our Christian faith, Lutheran heritage, rigorous academics, and practical real-life experiences, we prepare students to fulfill a higher purpose in their vocations and life. Learn more about Concordia University, Nebraska at our website, cune.edu. That's cune.edu.
Welcome Welcome back to the Coffee Hour. I'm Sarah Golseth.
I'm Andy Bates.
We are celebrating Share-a-thon 2026. To support KFUO during Share-a-thon, you can text the message KFUO to the number 41444 or visit kfuo.org. We are in the middle of a great conversation with Dr. Bernard Bull, president of Concordia University, Nebraska, about AI and content creation. And before we went to break, you were talking a little bit about that difference between how AI shapes content, creates content, and how it's distinct from how humans create content. How has that distinction shaped how you are now creating content?
Yeah, so I've kind of built a little bit of a list of practices that I'm committed to following just to help myself, just to differentiate my own writing from AI. And I don't know if it's entirely successful, but it's an experiment for me. And that's what I think, Sarah, you had seen when I'd posted on Facebook. I was thinking out loud a little bit. I was putting some rough draft thinking around this. And I'd said things like some that are very, very specific. And I have to be honest that I can fall into the trap of being a little judgmental sometimes when I read literature today. And I imagine some probably think the same thing when they read my writing, because there are these telltale signs that AI was likely involved in the crafting of something. I can't use the word quietly today anymore because AI has taken it over. And so anytime you see something that's written and it talks about quietly doing this or quietly doing that, in the back of my mind, I'm wondering if AI helped generate it. And it's funny though, because now that I've thought about it so much, I was just writing an essay and I actually did use the word quietly, and I was debating on whether I should just remove the word altogether because maybe it would trigger someone to think that AI had been used to draft it. But so that's like a really simple one. But you know, the other thing is most of the AI tools really struggle to provide concrete and vivid descriptions. They can't provide a concrete or vivid description based upon lived experience because AI doesn't have lived experience. So I do actually, I'm trying to put a little bit more of my own sensory experience into my writing, which is actually good writing anyway. It's a great practice, but not being afraid to maybe juxtapose or weave in some lived experiences that are unique to me as an example or as an illustration, to put a little bit more of myself into the writing and be a little bit more vulnerable sometimes. I'm looking at the things that I jotted down there. I wrote, I love and rely upon talking about things in groups of three. So I love the rule of three.
I do too.
You know, the Bible has it, faith, hope, and love. We talk about truth, beauty, and goodness in classical education. We have the rule of three all over the place, and I'm not about to get rid of faith, hope, and love just because AI is using the rule of three, but I do find myself carefully considering whether I just reference groupings of three, and sometimes I try to use a broader array of comparisons or words or phrases, just because I know that anytime if you're reading something and in a single paragraph it groups ideas in threes, two or three times in that paragraph, there's a really good chance that that was partially or fully drafted by AI today. And so I'm just being cautious of that because I want people to know that when I write, I'm writing authentically me. And if I am going to leverage AI for something, I want to be honest with people about it and tell them so they get a sense of what's my voice and what's not. I also, you know, I've come to at least this current iteration of AI, it's terrible at weaving disparate concepts and illustrations into a really powerful message. And that's something that's a really beautiful thing for great communicators and writers, is that you'll weave some different metaphors or illustrations together, and maybe you'll layer them on top of one another so that you give one illustration and it takes them a little bit into the concept, and then another illustration takes them a little deeper, and then the third one allows them to look at the topic from yet another angle or see it from a fresh perspective. I remember I was just giving a talk on AI recently, and I was thinking, okay, what is the least AI way that I could introduce this topic? Which sounds bad because now I'm being influenced by AI by trying to not be AI. But I thought of a play in I think it was Norwegian. I mean, it was a Scandinavian country. Henrik Ibsen, An Enemy of the People. It was a really old play about a doctor who comes into this village, and it's a spa town where they have these baths and with this really well-known sparkling water and these spa baths. And he comes in, and this was their main business in the town. They would get lots of people coming. And he comes in and he tests the water and he finds that it has some toxins or poisons in it. And while he knows people aren't going to be excited about it, he decides he's going to tell them about this, and they'll be grateful that he's helping look out for their health. But instead, they turn him into an enemy of the people. Like, he's undermining their economic well-being and their livelihood. And they want to quiet him and censor him and silence him and so forth. And I shared that story about AI where start as a story to talk about AI and say, I sometimes feel like the character that Henrik Ibsen is describing, this doctor who's coming in and pointing out the poison in the well that we're drinking from. And then I said, and sometimes I feel like the people in the town who are upset that people are telling me about the poison in the well. Like, I struggle on both sides of this issue. And I use that as an example, though, of communication, because it's really, really unlikely that most AI tools are going to start to talk about AI by referencing a obscure play by Henrik Ibsen. That's also a powerful story, and that has a really deeply human element that we can relate to. And sometimes you weave in a second story. So it's causing me to delve deeper into great literature of the past and, you know, good current literature. And then the last thing that I'll say that I'm kind of committed to more and more as I'm thinking about how to communicate in this digital age is AI has not lived our lives. And the more of us in our writing and communication, the more human it's going to sound and it's going to feel. You know, AI, you know, it loves to, you know, has certain stylistic preferences and so forth that that I try to avoid a little bit, just so it's not a barrier for the reader who would be tempted to think that maybe I didn't write this myself. But more and more, I'm just trying to be me. And I know that doesn't work for all forms of writing, you know, and as an academic and academic writing, it's sort of taboo to write in the first person sometimes. Although there are places where you can write in the first person in academic writing where it's acceptable. And if we look at some of the great literature of the church, even going back to the early church, you read Augustine's Confessions, he didn't have a problem writing the first person. And it wasn't all self-absorbed kind of writing either. I mean, ultimately, he was pointing to the God of the universe in there. You know, my heart was restless until it found its rest in thee. Thee is the focus there. You know, God is the focus, but he did reference his restless heart to get there.
Perhaps maybe just one insight for those of us who create content regarding AI, whether it's a caution or a concern or maybe how to use it best, one insight from your experience that you'd like to share with the rest of us who create content.
Right. Well, what I would say is start with you. Start with your own work. Do your own work first. So if you are going to make use of AI, don't let it frame your thinking at the beginning, in the early stage. If start with something that you're working on. So be careful to outsource the framing of the argument and even sort of what you select. And I think that's a really valuable starting point for people, is make sure that you're still in the driver's seat, that you're in charge, that you're really not outsourcing that which God has gifted to you distinctly. And I think that's my first maybe word of advice. I think that's a good starting point. There's a lot more that we could get into. Obviously, keep in mind that AI is not shaped or informed by the wisdom of God's word. And you can try to train it and the like and say, reference the confessions and the scriptures and your answers and all. But that's different than what C.F.W. Walther talks about, for example, in Long Gospel, when he says that, you know, Long Gospel, it's a concept that can be understood by a child, but in another way, it's something that can only be taught by the Holy Spirit in the school of experience. You know, don't disregard that part of formation that has been part of our history. You know, Luther talked about it as meditatio, tentatio, and oratio, that the struggle of the Christian life is part of the making of a theologian. Lean into and recognize that that is part of how God has created us. James 1, you know, talks about asking God for wisdom, but it also says, consider it pure joy, my brothers, when you face trials of many kinds, for you know the testing of your faith will develop perseverance, and perseverance must finish its work so that you are mature and complete, not lacking anything. And so, you know, it's not just about a product when you're creating. You're being formed by what you do and your habits. And keep that in mind. And, you know, I can't outsource lifting weights if I want to get stronger. I can't hire someone else to go, you know, bench press for me. And the same thing's true about the deep thinking that goes on with content creation. One last thought, it's an Isaac Asimov quote. I don't think he was a Christian, but one of the things I liked about him, he was a science fiction author, and he says, writing to me is thinking with my fingers. And so keep in mind that in the process of creating content and writing, you are forming your thoughts. You are grappling with truth and falsehood. You are coming to understand something. And so don't be so quick to give that up and pass that on to some machine to do for you.
Dr. Bernard Bull, president of Concordia University, Nebraska, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Coffee Hour during Shareathon 2026. We are so grateful for the support of listeners like you, and your support is necessary for programs like this, The Coffee Hour, that bring you insightful stories like the one we just had with Dr. Bull. To support KFUO during Shareathon, you can text the message KFUO to the number 41 or visit kfuo.org. You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Sarah Golseth.
I'm Andy Bates.